Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Before we start, I'm asked to mention that this is going to be audio recorded, so if you're asking questions later or anything, we're asked to speak up clearly so that the recording comes out okay for later on. And we might be slightly early, but I think we'll start because it's a bit tight for time anyway, in 45 minutes. So thank you for coming. I'm Richard Williams from Toshiba. I'm the higher education guy at Toshiba. Before I say anything else, I'm going to pass you over to Hugh Lavery from Leeds Metropolitan University, who's going to just sort of set the scene for us.
Thanks very much, Richard. As we said, Hugh Lavery, Director of Information, Media and Technology Services, Leeds Metropolitan University. I'd like to thank Richard for inviting me to introduce the session, and of course all the other members of the PEGASUS Consortium. Norman Helpline, who we use, Kipu 2X, Aspiring GTEC, who we also use. One of the reasons why I'm here, I actually use half the members of this consortium, so I thought it'd be somebody who would experience them. The aim of this session is to enable PEGASUS to inform you of who they are, what they do, and how they can help us set, meet, and hopefully exceed some of our students' expectations. What are these expectations? If you've looked at, I'm sure you have, the NUS Charter on Technology in Higher Education, some examples are: institutions should consider the accessibility and implications of technology-enhanced learning for all student groups. Administration should be made accessible, more accessible, through the use of technology, including e-submissions, feedback, and course assessment. And I think one that we're all very keen on is using technology to enhance learning and teaching. This should be a priority when making investment decisions. It is at our university, and I'm hearing more and more through my USISA colleagues, it is at their places as well. These are actually just 3 of the 10 points of the charter. If you haven't seen it, I'd strongly recommend you have a look at it, because we all know about the NUS charter, but there's actually one on technology as well, which I think will affect everyone here if you're learning technologists, working in pedagogy, or in the technology supply environment that I am. I actually believe our students have a sense of entitlement, not just about higher education, but how that educational experience is delivered and undertaken. Because, and I have a little bit of experience because I have a 23-year-old who's doing postgrad and a 19-year-old doing grad, in their social life, they can access and participate wherever and wherever they are. They come expecting exactly that same experience at university. So how can we meet this sense of entitlement? I think it's by working with the students through their organisations, but also probably reaching out to the parents and carers as well, with our internal service and teaching colleagues and partners such as PEGASUS, to ensure a number of things: collaboration, cooperation, most importantly communication, but recognition of others' contributions, and we must trust working together to deliver. There's a lot of silos I found in the university world where people just do what it's actually what I call IMBY, in my backyard. We'll develop everything here. I think we need to work together to deliver more cost effectively. But different universities have different needs. So the solutions and delivery need to be tailored to suit our students and our requirements. Because one size will not fit all, no matter what anybody says, including government. So why do we need these partnerships with groups like PEGASUS? I think it's basic economics. They help lower risk, rationalise resources, avoid duplication, provide us choice in how we supply things, provide flexibility, and actually, very importantly, involve the subject matter expertise of those involved, not on the technology side, but internally within our universities of our pedagogical experts. But back to the sense of entitlement, what are our students expecting from our services and platforms? What they get in outside: responsiveness, reliability, consistency, stable platforms, but most importantly, training in these technologies. There's a huge discussion about how digitally literate our students are nowadays. I think they're actually digitally capable. They're used to things working. They still need, unless it's so intuitive they don't need it, and not many companies provide systems like that, there still has to be training. So otherwise, we're just delivering something that won't be used. I think we've all been involved in things like that in the past. Now, we can do all these things as individual institutions, and I am sure we do. But we want to do them more effectively, efficiently, and cheaper by delivering partners. So, I'd like to hand it over to Richard, who will share his thoughts on how Pegasus can help us deliver some of the platforms and services to help meet our students' sense of entitlement in the technology-enabled learning and teaching area. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, you'll notice there's some seats out here, and the idea was that we've got representatives from each of the five organisations that are part of Pegasus, but it seems silly to sit them here and have them facing you with a projector shining in their eyes, so they're going to come and sit here in a minute when I finish just introducing the topic. So we'll skip over this slide for now. I'll tell you a little bit about this. I'll explain what Pegasus is, but basically it was a code name. We never intended to use it as a marketing tool, but it kind of stuck, and so we're stuck with the name Pegasus even if we don't really want to be. Bit of history. Toshiba involved with laptops and students because of our involvement with the National Purchasing Agreement for Higher Education. This started in 1998 when the first national agreement was tendered. Toshiba was successful on that, and so were GTEC, and it's been re-tendered 3 or 4 times since. Every time we've been successfully reappointed to the agreement, and we're the leading supplier of notebooks into universities in the UK. And we were awarded best value status on that agreement in the last tender round. So we've been involved with notebooks going into universities for a long time. And it's always been the case with the national agreement that students were supposed to be able to access the agreement at the same prices with the same benefits. So in other words, they should get the benefit of the better warranty, the supported pricing, and other advantages that the agreement brings. But the problem has been, and certainly was initially, the students don't know about purchasing agreements, they don't understand about that stuff. They're familiar with high street purchasing, but they're not really familiar, and online these days, I guess, but not with university purchasing arrangements. So in order to try and make them accessible to students, to the benefit of students, and the university were keen that we should do so, GTEC introduced Student Store, which is a website where students can buy online and still enjoy the advantages of that purchasing agreement, the increased warranty, the supported pricing, and the measured response times on service calls and support and so on. So it's actually a way that students can make use of it. And over the years, quite a few universities have got customised sites within Student Store so that GTEC can give them what they want their students to be able to buy with additional preloads or whatever they can do. So that's been around for several years now. And I think there are 60 or 70 universities that are now involved with that site. We've also been involved with Aspire, who you saw probably stand upstairs, who manage bursary and scholarship in a constructive way, and we'll come to that later. And we've been working with them at several of their university sites, East London, Anglia Ruskin and so on, for a number of years now, where one of the options that students can use their bursary to support their studies would be a Toshiba laptop or a netbook or something like that. And we've also been involved in quite a few schemes where universities provide laptops to students. Open University, for example, University of Essex, or where they want to subsidise a device for students, part pay for it maybe, or loan schemes where they want to buy things to loan out to students. So we've done a lot of work with students in IT. What we have noticed in the last year or two is a lot of interest in this area, and this topic of bring your own device, the BYOD topic. So we started to think about this whole area and what we could do to help find solutions that would fit with this. And bring your own device, there's a bit more to this than just turning up at university with a laptop. Students have been doing that for years anyway. But it's now become an approach for businesses to supply for their staff, possibly public sector organisations, universities even, perhaps for staff use as well. The idea being that rather than giving your staff in the business, say, a standard IT device, a desktop or a laptop, preloaded with the standard software, with the antivirus, with all the management software and tools that you'd have on there, rather than that, you encourage them to source their own device or to bring their own device, and you make it work for them within your organisation. You put whatever systems you need in place so that their choice of device works to do the job that they need to do. And the advantages of that clearly would be things like you may over time be able to reduce your standard provision, which could be a cost saving, although that's not the main driver. It might add flexibility because you can have people working in a more cooperative social environment, that kind of rearrangement of your buildings. And also, you're likely to have more user satisfaction because they've chosen the device. They've got something that they want to work with that suits their lifestyle. So it could be a tablet rather than a laptop, or it could be a smartphone, perhaps. So, but something that they need to use, which they feel happy with and fits in the way they work, rather than giving them a standard issue device, which doesn't have much flexibility to it. It's certainly more than just giving people Wi-Fi access, or if you're using your own device, you've got to come in through a web portal with limited functionality. I mean, if you want to do that, you can do that kind of thing at McDonald's or Starbucks. If you come into the university, most students expect a bit more than that kind of limited access on their own devices. So, what are the expectations? Hugh touched on this. But they vary widely. Different students are going to want different things. But certainly, reliable, useful network access would be a good thing, and help whenever they need it to make that access work for them. And this is a very important topic. Obviously, being online is essential these days for whatever you're trying to do. I suspect if you're 19 or 20 years old, it's probably more essential than it is for me. I don't do half those things that they seem to be doing all the time, but I still find it pretty essential for me. So if we're going to exceed expectations, that might include providing a welcoming IT environment that enables them to do what they need to do. So access to learning materials in multiple ways from multiple devices, access to standard applications for the university, but also maybe specialist software for departments, things that they need to use, not just on university-owned machines, but also on their own devices. Support when they need it, which could be round the clock. Students tend to work night times, weekends, and so on. And that support might include not only connection to your network, but also support with the software that you expect them to be able to use, and with any hardware problems they might have, even though it's their own device that may be several years old and they haven't just purchased it. And if you're going to give that support, you've got to get it from somebody who you trust to deliver it in a way that fits in with your normal support service. And if you're going to provide these services for students bringing their own devices, you need to make sure that the access is equitable, that everyone can participate, not just those who can afford the latest hardware device. So you may need to think about advice for what's a suitable device, what it is that you support, recommendations, for example, or possibly a subsidy for device choice for those people that need to get something. And some institutions don't really cooperate where they're putting together their ambitions and development in their teaching and learning plans, the way they're delivering their courses, with their IT provision or their IT encouragement, certainly within the bring-your-own-device type arena. So, having had these thoughts and discussed this with various people and had these ideas confirmed at various conferences and events this year, we formed this Pegasus codenamed organisation, which is really a group of organisations that all offer things to do with student IT. And the idea is that we can work as a group to put forward solutions for problems that you may have or you may encounter. And it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's what you need, and we'll try and help solve the problems for you. And the reason we're here today is to communicate these ideas to the people that quite often we don't get to see. Generally speaking, we meet IT people and maybe purchasing people, but we don't get to meet the people who are thinking about the student experience or who are thinking about teaching and learning and how that might develop over the years. So this was really an opportunity just to show you some of the things that are going on elsewhere, some of the things you can do these days, and some of the possibilities that you might want to think about. So there are six organisations. We've got the logos on the bottom there, and they will sit up here in a minute, so you can ask some questions, hopefully. But I'll just start with, I've said a bit about Toshiba already, but obviously NDNA is the national agreement. We do lots of different hardware devices, most of them mobile hardware devices, but we also do consumer electronics. We're an environmentally aware company. We have a pretty good record on environmental impact compared to many of our competitors. And we can also customise hardware devices to suit particular purposes. It's not commonly known. You think you have to buy off the price list, but actually we do quite a lot of build-to-order stuff and customising for particular requirements. GTEC. Jerry Kane is here from GTEC. He's their education sales manager, and They have been selling laptops to students, other mobile devices to students, for a long time. So not only do they support universities and organise repairs and logistics for universities, they do all that for individual students at their home addresses, at their campus addresses or whatever. For this purpose, for the Pegasus-type idea that we're pursuing here, they're offering to extend that warranty to the length of the student's course. So if it's a 4-year or 5-year course, potentially they could have the warranty and repair for the length of that course rather than the standard 3-year warranty which you get under the national agreement. They've also, in the past, run and supported bring-your-own-device schemes at universities such as Middlesex and Bournemouth and Warwick, where they supported not only new devices that were purchased, but also devices that students bought that was, you know, 5 years old and brought in from home, and they helped to fix the hardware when it went wrong and make it work and so on, which is kind of the kind of service that you might want. And the Students' Law site is a good source for students to actually get devices from. On the support side, then, Norman Helpline, you may be familiar with. They're run from the University of Northumbria. And we have Trevor here and Julian from Norman Helpline. What they do, if you're not aware, is they extend your existing support service to run 24 hours and 365 days a year, so weekends, night times, and so on. But it looks very much like your standard support service for your students and your staff. They understand your network, they understand your escalation procedures, and they deliver that for you on your behalf during the night and the weekends and so on. And it's a way of giving your students a lot more support than they would get using your standard hours. Kipu Networks, we have Steve here from Kipu, who produce security solutions for IT. For example, if you've got a student turning up at university with half a dozen different devices, maybe a smartphone, a tablet, a netbook, possibly a laptop, maybe an Xbox, they want to connect them all onto your network, because they're all network connectable devices. You might want to have a say in that. You might want to control that access and make sure it's secure. You might want to check the virus protection. You might want to make sure they conform to your policies. And Bradford Campus Manager, which Kipu supply, will do that for you. Steve can tell you more about this. He's the expert, and I'm not. But they have other solutions in the security area as well. 2X are a company that produce software for application publishing, virtual desktop. So, in other words, they're in that same area as Citrix and VMware and so on, but they do this across a range of platforms. So, for example, we have an Android tablet here. Whoops, I just turned it off. We have an Android tablet here, which is was running a Windows session. So it's an Android tablet, but here we have Windows running on a server somewhere in Cheshire. We've got Windows software on here. So you could deliver your specialist applications, your standard software, on say, Apple devices, Android devices, Linux devices, whatever they have, by this kind of thing. And the thing about the 2X software is it's a lot lower in cost to license than you get from Citrix or some of the other providers. It's certainly, if you're interested in that area, it's certainly worth a look. Aspire, mentioned briefly earlier, we have David over here from Aspire, and they have a whole system for distributing bursaries and scholarships so the students can have a secure choice of how to make use of that bursary within guidelines that you can set, which are measurable and reportable, so that you can see how that's been spent, so what's happened with those bursaries or so on. So those systems are already in place in universities, and there's obviously scope for expansion there. We'll come back to that if you have some questions from David in a minute. So what are we suggesting? Overall, this whole thing really was to suggest that you should consider your overall IT experience that your students have. Don't assume that what you have or have had in the past is everything a student needs. Think about it, consider what the student gets, what they like. It might be worth, if you haven't done so already, finding out how they value your current IT experience and what maybe you can do to improve it. And we're here to help. If you need any assistance with implementing any of the kind of things that we've been talking about, this group of companies, which happens to be called Pegasus, can offer solutions in those areas that I've mentioned. So I won't go through them again, but basically all this kind of stuff that assists students to get the most out of their own devices, including potentially buying new ones or developing what you already have. So this is something we're talking about with the university already, for example. They're interested in supporting hardware to £150, so it would be a subsidy against something a student might buy if they've already got a laptop, and this is why choice is a good idea. They might well already have a laptop and don't want another one. However, they might prefer to get a tablet, which is light and easy to carry around, to go with it, or to a netbook or something like that. Under this scheme, the student would receive the device with a preload of software and information on it, antivirus and so on. Support would be provided from GTEC, and that one has a long way to go yet, but we're talking about it at the moment. The subsidy works on the basis that the university provides a list of eligible students, and they identify themselves on the student.org website. They can then complete the transaction, and it can be delivered directly to the student with a preload of software and so on, and they would get the support from GTEC and potentially from the Norman helpline. The sort of thing that we're looking at is this kind of combination where we've got an Android tablet, which is very light and easy to carry around, so this kind of thing, which has a 7 or 8 hour battery life, so it works all day, a lot easier than carrying a laptop. But when you go back to your bedroom, you've got a docking station, keyboard, mouse, plugs in the USB, this is all through the docking station, and a Toshiba TV would give you a large screen to work on, and potentially useful also for your games box or your TV access or your DVD playing, whatever. But that whole set, we're trying to get to a price of about £450 ex-VAT to make a kind of a portable but useful set of equipment for students. So that's kind of the area we're operating in. I've just covered over it very quickly, aware of the time, and we've got to finish it up fast. So what I wanted to do was to give you opportunity to people to ask specific questions about some of those areas that we're addressing with different organisations. So I think I'd like to first of all ask if there are any questions so far. If anybody like to start off by... Yes, hello.
I think the last line there is very good. I'm Paul from Bernstein University.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, because that's excellent. But what about Macintosh and design software such as CS,
yes,
and Photoshop, stuff like that? Is there any room for that type of development?
Yeah, there's no problem. I mean, depending on what, obviously, I'm from Toshiba, so I would like to study Toshiba hardware, but
yeah,
that's not a problem for my other organisation partners to support Apple software, to connect Apple software in terms of application delivery and so on. Do you want to say a bit about that, Paul?
That's the question that you're asking, really, into used devices. So you would take an Apple Mac device that the student had and connected that into a Windows environment.
Yeah.
Would this be a good point? Sorry to interrupt you there. Would it be a good point for you gentlemen to come and sit on the panel here? So David and Jerry and Steve and Paul and Trevor. It's just that way you can see who you're talking to. These are the guys. Yeah, I could do that. I'm just here. I'll turn the projector off in a minute so you're not if I can work out how to do it. So these are the guys sitting in front of you now. Paul, did you finish answering there, or did you want to carry on?
I think so. So, any other?
What about the software side of it, the Adobe software? Obviously, that packet last night.
Yes.
I'm interested in from my students in terms of how we could.
Sure.
Giving students kit when they come in, there is very, very. It's going to be something you're going to have to consider when the fees come in next year. But obviously, I'm from the art and design faculty, so I'm looking at the Apple Mac software was the one we use,
yes,
and also then the actual Adobe software, which is standard Gov, Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign.
And are you thinking of the software from the point of view of supporting that software for students to use on devices?
I mean, that's something that we would be quite happy to consider under the bring your own device support. You know, ostensibly that's offered, you know, in terms of technical hardware and warranty support. But if you'd like us to consider application support in specific areas like that, that's something we'd be quite happy to consider.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Trevor, do you do application support in that sense?
It depends on to the level of the support needed. Obviously, a lot of our support from an IT point of view is on Microsoft Office-based applications, etc. But obviously, as institutions, we're aware that, for example, our own students also use Macintosh-based or Apple-based software, and we are familiar with a range of that. It depends how specialist you want that support to be, because often a lot of that actual support is done by the academics themselves within the teaching day, and therefore what we're getting calls about out of hours could be about the functionality of that, or it's not actually working in the environment that the student's actually using it. So it depends very much about what that kind of support you're expecting, because sometimes it's very peculiar to an individual institution's actually learning and teaching and how it's actually being used. But in terms of difficulties with it actually not functioning because of what the student's actually doing, then we will endeavour to help talk the student or staff member through anything within our sort of abilities and the information supplied by one of our subscribing institutions.
Okay. But certainly, we'd be interested in talking to you to see what the issues were and see if we could help you to solve them.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Hello.
I'm Ray Barker from the College of Law. With the solution, with the 2X solution that puts a sort of Citrix type front end on tablets or solutions, what sort of prices are there for those? Is it something where an institution buys a license to cover X number of students, for example?
Currently, 2X sell their software by the server, actually. So, really, the price per user really comes down to how your IT department scales the solution. But as a rule of thumb, we are anywhere between 25 and 35 times cheaper than Citrix for largely the same solution. There are differences between what we provide and what they provide. But the core functions of what you need that you would get from Citrix, we've covered. People tend to find with Citrix that you pay 80% more for a large part of the product that most organisations don't actually use, and it's the 20% that you do use that you're paying a huge figure for.
But the licensing model is that you pay for the server software.
Yeah.
And that gives you a certain number of users who can connect to...
it's the size of your physical environment. So if you... I didn't want to get too technical, but if you had a small set of servers that were capable of running, let's say, 50 users per server, we would charge you the same amount for that one server that could run 50 users if you bought one server that could handle 250 users. There's not many out there that will do that, but if that was the case, then obviously the price per server is the same on either size. So the net result is the cost per user crashes dramatically. So we're seeing prices less than £10 or £15 per user, as opposed to Citrix, which can be upwards of £200 to £250 per user.
Hello.
Sorry, and we don't charge for the software that's on these, by the way.
Oh, yes, the client software was free.
Was free.
Sorry, I'm talking to you.
That's fine. Regan Haas from AMOSHI, the Student Services Organisation. Just looking at the title of this, and I did come in late, so I do apologise if this has already been covered, but we're looking at exceeding IT expectations, and I was wondering how you'd developed a baseline of what students' IT expectations are, and how you know that this model exceeds it and will continue to exceed it.
I didn't notice when you came in, so I don't know if you missed a bit of the front of it. But basically, we're saying that the students' expectations are quite varied. I mean, you know, but the basic thing that all students seem to want is to be able to connect multiple devices, certainly whatever they bring with them to university, and get functionality, not just necessarily internet access, but more than that, something they can use actually within their work on a device that they're comfortable with and that they can carry around with them or use in whatever way they want to use it, rather than having to use fixed assets within the university or have a device that they can't do a lot with when they're connected to it. So that's what we're trying to address, is trying to make students bring in their own device more functional.
But how do you know that you are actually exceeding the baseline of expectation? How do you know that going forward you'll keep being ahead of what you hopefully already are, but will keep being ahead of the curve in what those expectations are?
I think that's probably, you're never going to be able to succeed in defining them and staying ahead. But I mean, I think it's a question of upgrading to meet whatever expectations are there. I can't define the expectations exactly because it can vary considerably.
Just a moment.
Yes,
sure. It depends on your size of the IT equivalent to the Moshi. We're not going to have a flame war here, so it's all right. But I think in practical terms, one of the things that wasn't said at the Manchester Met presentation today was they realised quite early on that they needed to bolster their wireless network. And so they've completely floodwired, you say it yourself, completely floodwired their campus and increased the capacity there so that students can come in and engage and link their devices in. In terms of demonstrating that value and exceeding expectations, more and more IT departments are doing more and more customer feedback and that sort of surveying of the student population, because they need to keep ahead of the game to make sure they're accommodating things like bring their own devices, etc. It doesn't necessarily mean that the IT lab is dead in institutions. What you might see is more use of flexible space, because those students that do bring their kit in will want to sit around and do some group work together. But quite often, those in city centre universities won't want to carry their kit around. They'll still want their own device, but they want to connect to university facilities from wherever they are, whether it's Starbucks and all of those residents or more. So to answer your question, how is it exceeding, you've got that sort of ongoing benchmarking sort of process within IT departments, who may well after our seminar in a few weeks' time be using the Amoshi value and impact sort of kits to demonstrate that the impact of the changes they're making.
I think that's really helpful, because thinking of it from the national perspective of student services managers, and I may be speaking out of turn, I know that we've got a couple of members in this room, but thinking of in terms of how I would articulate things to our members, all these packages sound lovely, but they're no use unless you know why you're getting them, and that's the original question, I think,
sure,
that needs to be there so that you can pick the relevant solution.
No, I agree. I mean, all we're doing is really suggesting possibilities which may or may not be of use to a particular organisation.
Jared, can I ask
you
a question? Things, Matt, one of the things we've done is we've had a listening shuffle, and I actually work in what's called for the Deputy Vice Chancellor Student Experience, working with Libraries and Learning Innovation, Student Services and the Centre for Learning and Teaching. And what we do is, and we have a representative of one of the Vice Presidents of the Union on that group. We meet monthly for 3 hours. It's all about how can we enhance the student experience. And then we work with suppliers and partners like Pegasus, Toshiba and that, to say, here's our own requirements, please come and talk. But your internal communication has to happen first before you go externally. So otherwise you just get the silo view of what you think the student might want. It's very important to get the students involved, as well as people working with the students, and the centres for learning and teaching as well. And to pick up on that, you're seeing more and more IT departments not just go to the partnership with their student body, but also partnership with their suppliers. Because unless the suppliers understand what the institutions are trying to get out of their software, hardware, or whatever, then it's going to be harder for them to sort of meet those needs. So you're seeing an increase in sort of supplier relationship as a sort of required skill of the IT department.
Just to back up what you were saying, very much, I don't think it's so much that students articulate particular expectations, it's just that they take certain things for granted, which move very fast. And they tend to collide with some of the traditional cultures and priorities of internal IT departments. So if you take the traditional IT approaches, we have a closed system for our institution and our first responsibility is to protect and secure, then everybody walks in with a live smart device which expects to automatically log in without faffing about with a password and a this and a that. I mean, we had a wireless system that could take 400 simultaneous logons. That seemed fine. Immediately crashed, of course, as soon as everybody got a smartphone. So we have to flood with wireless just to accommodate all the mobile devices that people walked in with. But then you get into the situation, you don't want a multiple login for the library and then for this and then for that. And, I mean, that drives staff off, let alone the students. You wouldn't articulate that demand. You just know you're really fed up when you find that's how the system works. So you then have to have a single login, which sounds like really simple to someone like with my kind of job. With the IT jobs, you've actually got to provide it. It's not simple at all. It's actually hard and difficult. And they haven't lost that need to protect and secure a bit, as you described. So there are tensions here, I think. But I just think what people take for granted as an expectation just moves really quickly, and we have to run to keep up all the time. Mm.
Yeah, just wondered whether the guy from Leeds Metropolitan's had any feedback from the students on what they've provided so far. I'm quite sure what you have actually done.
National Student Survey, we get 87% of people are happy with our IT. International Student Barometer, it was 96%. One of the things, I've only been there 4 years now, I come from an industry before that, where I was always taught is find out your customers' expectations and try and exceed them as far as your budgets and stuff allow. So there's a lot of innovation. The things we have done are single sign-on, not just for staff but for students as well, because there's nothing more frustrating. Flooding Wi-Fi. There are limits of technology, but you do as much as you can, and that includes having stuff like EduRoam as well. What I found students love is to go somewhere else and they use the log on edge room from the house. They just log on automatically. That's the thing, it's the experience. When I walk in, I'm logged on, I don't have to log in. We're introducing bring your own device printing. So there'll be wireless printing. So instead of having to log on to one of our computers, as long as they've got the laptop, they can log on to our network wirelessly, print off the stuff. It's stuff like that. But we're still not as far as advanced as we'd like to, because in fact, tough couple of years with budgets and stuff. Whereas what you can do with existing things and working with partners or proven solutions that are out there already.
Is that something measurable where you can see
you
improve, for example, on the NSS?
No, we've stayed steady while a number of other places went down. But it's also the challenge you have is once you've met your expectations, the rise.
There is also the. I think the NSS is a fairly crude measurement.
Yes. Very much so. But a fairly crude measurement I measured on.
Hello. You raised the issue about pedagogy and why we're doing all of this stuff. It's all very well entertaining students and allowing them to browse wherever they are. But the real question for us is how is it changing learning? So I just wondered whether how we would like to say, because we put 200 netbooks into a very large learning space in this project that I borrowed. And what we found was that although the students took the opportunities and made the space their own, and we were quite right, this makes a lot of difference to the way they use learning spaces. We've still got a load of work to do at the start. Tend not to use the building.
This is not our area, this is your area. However,
I just want
I'm aware that what's possible in blended learning these days is not being fully utilised. The technology is ready for it, and maybe the internal policies and development haven't yet sort of caught up enough to make full use of the technology.
I think what I was going to say, I forget whether it was a USISA report, but what one institution actually, by giving the staff but they actually changed the staff embraced the whole opportunity thing better, not because they could use that device for learning, but it just changed their mentality, it changed their digital attitudes and literacy. So I think there's two parts to this. Do we meet the expectations of the students, and do we empower the staff to stay with those students and their expectations?
Yes, I think you're right.
Richard, just in talking about student expectations, I mean, it's part of what we do. We have for a number of years run a survey of the student users, for example, of out-of-hours helplines, and students from LeedsNet and others who are part of the membership would have answered that. And we get something like 8,000 responses. So we think it's representative of the users of the out-of-hours. And we also, we ask the usual statistical stuff, which is, as you say, is a crude measure, a bit like the NSS. It's just percentages. And obviously, 80-odd percent say it's important to be supported beyond the norm. But then we also, like the NSS, ask for free comments about things. And I think sometimes with the NSS, the free comments are more indicative of what's going on rather than the percentages. And we definitely found that with our own survey. And you get comments, you know, for example, some examples, you know, as a great deal of work is done at the weekends or after business hours, the fact that the service is available is great, and things like that. And you get also stuff from distance learners talking especially about how important things working for 24 hours are, and you've got international students, etc. So I think the people do have expectations, and I think what we're finding is more and more people are realising that there has to be this sort of coherent offering where students have the expectation, and staff, that things just work. Now, we all know as technology people that it's not as straightforward as that, and I think the more that we get together to actually deliver that expectation, and become as far like sort of like the plumbing, it just works, people expect it. When there are difficulties, they get resolved. And I think it's that kind of offering that makes an impression on our students specifically, such as we've noticed on our own NSS score, speaking as our own institution, that comments about lack of support just don't exist anymore. In fact, the comments about what's great about the institution are there's 24-hour support. And I think it's things like that that make an impact. And eventually, your scores, a bit like the LeedsNet ones you've heard about, they either stay static or they improve. So, and I think its old thing is that you then can target the things where the students have got a legitimate whinge about. And I think it's things like that you get to grips with over time.
I think some of the evidence that we've got, as Aspire is slightly out of the loop because it's not just about technology, it's about bursary provision for good things, but it does. And continues to include a great deal of technology in terms of devices that the students have, and certainly case studies that we've done at UEL, for example, where we've been running it since 2006. So we've now got two full tranches of students who've gone right through their courses and come out the other side with their awards, has shown that those students who take advantage of the resources that are available for them, and it's not just technology, it is also their books, it is also in some cases travel to university to enable them to get there, but it has shown very much that those students who've taken full advantage of the scheme are twice as likely to progress into their second semester, second year and onto a degree course than those who didn't, and all the sort of the graph that Richard put up earlier showing where the money is being spent also gives the institutions some valuable data in terms of their milestones and their targets, and being able to say we've used this money, it's gone into these resources for the individual students, and these are the outcomes of it, and they can relate those that expenditure or those bursaries to outcomes. And I can't unfortunately quote one on technology, but certainly in terms of books, we've got graphs showing that the quality of degree achieved by these students at UEL, there is a direct, I won't say correlation, it's a correlation, not necessarily causal, but those students who spent more on the core textbooks for their books, whether they be electronic books delivered through a laptop or an e-reader or physical textbooks, achieved higher quality degrees, and there's a direct correlation to that coming through, and actually got through to the ends of their courses. So, you know, we believe that very much that the direct provision of those resources, whatever they may be, does enrich the student experience and provides valuable support for the students while they're in course, as opposed to other things like cash potentially and fee waivers, which may be of a benefit later on, but the student's not paying those, not getting the benefit of those fee waivers now. And what the people at UEL say is that having those resources and having the support around them keeps their students on course, and their retention rate, which is one of their key targets, has dropped from 15% to 7%. Sorry, retention rate, their dropout rate has dropped from 15% to 7% in the first 4 years of the scheme, and they see that as a major, major benefit for them. And they're way now ahead of their benchmark on that figure.
Okay. we've been given a half 5 minute warning through the door there. Steve, you haven't had a chance to say anything yet. Did you want to just say something about security solutions?
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know how many guys are aware of Kipu Networks at all, but Kipu as a business has brought in place to essentially help IT teams to meet student expectations. So in terms of enhancing the student experience, we look to work with the strategists behind, you know, the student experience from an IT perspective. So ultimately, you know, through the explosion of mobile devices, and like Toshiba and other generic tablet manufacturers, we help, you know, provide an automated way of managing those devices. We also enable flexible access wherever it be, whether it be on campus, whether it be in the halls, whether it even be to a remote worker. I mean, you know, we've all got experience and bad stories from when, you know, the snow took over, for example. So having something simple like a remote working facility at zero touch for the end user, for the student, has been quite popular. Whether it be looking at the student's experience whilst they're on the network, being able to do things like control their access to different types of applications. So a lot of international student base, Skype has become quite predominant. How do we look to manage that? How do we look to make sure that, you know, it doesn't suddenly take over a huge amount of the bandwidth and cause problems to other students that have got legitimate requirements for that bandwidth too? So really working with these institutions to help the IT teams to address the key challenges, whatever they are. What we have found is that, you know, there are still a lot of universities which are still looking at the ways in which they can manage these unknown devices better. And, you know, like a lot of my colleagues here, you know, we're quite prevalent within the HE and FE space, and a lot of the universities that we work with measure it in terms of, you know, feedback from the student base. And certainly, you know, a recent university deployment we've done in the University of West London for the Thames Valley University, they put in place a new wireless solution throughout the campus, one of the largest networks in the UK. They also back that up with our Bradford Campus Manager solution to automate the management of student devices. And the feedback from that project was very positive. And the reason why it was quite positive was because at one of their recent meetings, much in the same way that Hugh mentioned about having regular updates with the student body, they had exactly the same thing. But independently, they had a representation from the student union come forward and vote that project as the most successful they'd seen, because they'd seen a marked increase in collaboration and group learning. And that's just simply through delivering a project to IT's expectations. So it's just another good example of, you know, how we can work with IT and help them to improve the student experience.
Okay, we're going to be hurried out of the room now, I think, since it's now half past. We haven't really had time to cover very much, because it's a whole big topic. I don't know if anybody, before you leave, like to take business cards on him so we can continue the discussion. We'd be very happy to come out to your campus and talk more about any part of this group of solutions to people, your institution, who need to hear it. We realise that they're not all here, so if you'd like us to come and talk to your guys, we can come and do that. All of us, some of us, one of us, two of us, you know. So by all means, I'm going to put out some business cards, the other guys have them as well, and just get in touch if you'd like to do so, and we'd be happy to come and go through this stuff in more detail.
The presentation will be part of, are we going to be able to get that presentation?
Yes, I can publish that for you, yeah. I think it'll come through the organisation.
Right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, unfortunately, we've got a bit of cheap. Yeah, I'm sorry. that's right.
Absolutely, yeah. We didn't talk to Brighton
did
at one point, but it was to finance guy, so we didn't really get the opportunity to talk to, and this was before we were fully formed,
yeah,
and before the 2012 debate came on.
Okay.
So I'll certainly be interested in coming back.
That's fine.
I'm sure we'd like to start as soon as we can, but unfortunately we've got to wait for this session's been audio recorded, so we'd have to wait until I'm given the red light. So I'm sorry about that. I mean, I've heard about the graveyard shift. I've never been given the sort of Dante's second level of hell shift before. So thank you all very much for staying. And we've got a red light, so we can start. Well, I'm Andrew Rawson from Action and Access, and for almost the last three years, with the Higher Education Academy, we've been delivering a project called What Works? Student Retention and Success. So although it, perhaps the workshop's headline is student retention, so it's very much about student retention and success, which in many ways, obviously, you know, you can't sort of split apart. The conference as a whole today is about enhancing the student experience. There's been lots of discussion about student engagement, and really that's kind of what I'd like to pick up. And in a sense, there's not been an awful lot of discussion about what is the student experience for, or what is student engagement for. Clearly, in the context of what I'll talk about, it's about retaining students, it's about completion, and it's about student success generally. The programme itself is actually funded by the Higher Education Funding Council for England initially, but is run by the Paul Hamlin Foundation, an educational charity. And they asked Action and Access and the Higher Education Academy to coordinate the project and to disseminate findings. So in a sense, this seminar is one part of that dissemination. The programme began in 2009, and finishes at the end of this academic year, so I'm able now to feedback some of the interim findings that we've gotten and feedback, and I'd be very interested to get any feedback from yourself on anything that I'm able to say. And then perhaps in terms of the seminar, if people want to make a comment on student retention as the Paul Hamlin Foundation programme looks, or in terms of their own institutions, then we can have a kind of discussion. We're due to finish at 5:15, obviously if people have to go for trains, I should understand it's not my presentation that's driving people away, but I hope you'll be able to stay till 5:15, or perhaps if there's not a lot to discuss, we can finish a little earlier. But this will be the kind of end session for the conference. I'd like to start with a couple of quotes. I mentioned that our project started in 2009, and I go back to the public accounts report in February 2008, Staying the Course, Retention of Students in HE. And in his introduction, the chair, Edward Lee, said, "It's 5 years since our last report on student retention, but the percentage of students dropping out from their original universities has not budged from 22%. And that figure is kind of roughly the same today. This is despite some 800 million being paid to universities over the same period to help retain students most likely to withdraw from courses earlier. So clearly at that point, you know, you're making a point. It goes on to highlight that there were at the time proportionally more widening participation students and that they are more likely to leave. I'm not quite sure whether there's any real research to back that up. He says there's a great disparity on retention numbers between universities and that there's an absence of reliable, relevant management information, especially data on the reason that people leave. And then he finishes by suggesting that providing additional academic support for students, for example, maths elements where necessary, and access to tutors can provide pastoral and academic support, and that's where the focus should be. So fairly sort of limited kind of analysis, if you like, but pointing out three or four important things. David Eastwood, who was then chief exec of the Hefty, commented that the report acknowledges that the UK has a higher estimated graduate rate than most OECD countries, and this has been achieved and maintained during a period when HE has opened up both to increased numbers and to a greater diversity of students. So, you know, to counterbalance the first quote. And also Bill Rammell, who was here earlier, he echoed the same kind of point as well when he was Minister for HE. But if over a fifth of students are not transferring to a second year, then there's obviously still plenty of work to be done. And this has also been recognised more recently, along with the recognition of the reality of different retention rates at different institutions, in the offer guidance about access agreements. That was March of this year. And again, to quote them, an institution with a low proportion of students from underrepresented backgrounds will wish to concentrate mostly on increasing those proportions, while an institution with an already representative student body but relatively high non-completion rates will wish to include measures and targets aimed at improving student retention. So it's clearly something which is still an important message. And I suppose really offer highlight that the important message has come down from ministers that retention needs to be improved, particularly at some institutions and particularly on some programmes. So it's not an across the board thing. Anyway, not much later than the Stay in the Course report in September 2009, we were asked by Paul Hamling to work with them on their programme. There was £1 million available for a robust evidence-based analysis and evaluation, as it was quoted. And our job really was to identify and to support the different projects and to disseminate the most effective strategies so that we could try and ensure high continuation and completion rates for universities. 63 proposals were received from a wide range of institutions and 7 were selected, which involved over 20 institutions. 2 key areas have been identified in the literature, and this also appeared to be in common through the proposals. And they were, 1, the provision of academic support to students, and 2, the social integration of the student, and that was to promote what was called a sense of belonging. So the 7 chosen projects covered a range of issues which actually sets out the territory quite well. And if I've been allowed to have a PowerPoint, I've put those up so you can see them, but it was suggested to me that the PowerPoint wasn't going to be available. So I'll read a quick summary of them out to you. But I do think it sets out the territory around student engagement, enhanced student experience, and particularly with regard to retention very well. So Northumbria, Bedford and Manchester, they were working around a framework which would enable students to better understand the nature of learning in higher education, again something that was mentioned earlier, and as well as a language for a structured dialogue between tutor and student. They also were looking at a tool for measuring the impact of interventions. So again, mostly what I'll say would pick up things that were said earlier. Aston University was leading a number of other universities looking at different models of peer mentoring and their impacts. Reading and Oxford Brookes were looking at personal development planning, study support and personal tutor system. Sunderland, with Newcastle and Hull, were looking at a focus on student integration, how students integrate into institutions. And they had separate studies into mature students at Hull, engineering students at Newcastle and local students at Sunderland. So again, producing some really fascinating material there. Anglia Ruskin, together with 2 regional colleges, looked at, again, support through personal tutoring and the use of what they're calling non-academic student advisors, which is a role that they've developed. Leicester looked at the analysis of appropriate data. You remember the committee at my first report said that there wasn't much data around. And they also looked at testing out what studios identified as making a difference and what gives a sense of belonging. Nottingham, Trent, Bournemouth and Bradford were the 7th project. and they looked at, it was very interesting, it just had me a bit baffled really, but what makes students stay rather than leave? So looking from that point of view, and they were talking about doubters, students who were considering leaving, and they looked and sort of doing comparisons against low retention courses and high retention courses. So again, some quite interesting information really about student attitudes. In the fifth briefing that we put out, we identified a set of some commonalities across all the projects. And again, it wouldn't have been on the PowerPoint if we had a PowerPoint, so I've just basically printed some off. Thank you. So, as I say, what we did as the project went along, we put out six briefings. This is the fifth one. And as it completed its second year, these were the striking commonalities which emerged from each of the project teams. So first of all, and some of them might surprise us, some might not, a significant minority of students think about leaving HE at least once. The quality of the academic experience is crucial. Family and friends are important in encouraging students to stay in HE, and often they do include the informal information, advice and guidance. Again, an obvious one, perhaps student motivation to study a particular programme contributes to persistence. Early engagement, particularly in the academic sphere, is valuable. Institutions need to work with students to develop their knowledge, confidence, identity to become successful HE learners. Promoting student engagement in socially oriented activities is effective at creating social networks, and that contributes to learning. Students need access to a range of services where they can use to meet their requirements. Nurturing a sense of entitlement and belonging is crucial to student success. And active student engagement with learning, peers, staff and professional services promotes a sense of belonging and improves retention and success. I mean, it's not exactly counterintuitive, is it? I mean, my background is careers, and probably if I'd been asked, I would have come up with most of those. And it's straightforward and fairly commonsensical, I think, in a way. But we still have the 22% non-continuation figure, which is obviously very high. And I'm sure none of us accept that it's reached a natural level. And we're all obviously trying to bring it down. But clearly, in reality, each student would have a different factor or a combination of factors that was going to be affect non-completion if it did. So it's a sort of complex thing for institutions to respond to. But again, the centrality of student engagement in higher education and a sense of belonging are the two things that kind of come up over and over and over again. And that is something which has come out in the literature. But again, quite a lot of the literature is actually American that we were looking at. And I'm not sure there's an awful lot of literature, in terms of proper research literature, in terms of retention in England. There is an institutional role, together with putting in the systems and the processes that are needed to deliver the capacity of students to engage. And again, it's a bit of a faff to give these names. The programme developed a model. And the lucky ones, who were first going to get the blue coloured ones, I'm afraid that the others are in black. This is a model that was produced to try and visually show the way in which student engagement, student experience, could and should be could be supported. So again, it would look much more glamorous up on the wall, but you can see the model. Taking preparation and transition and student capacity development first of all, again, the sorts of practice and the things that were coming out of the projects were really that It's obviously, a lot of it's about outreach work, pre-entry advice and guidance, on-course and institution, careers, all kinds of information, really. And where things seem to be working well, there was an extended induction rather than a perhaps old-fashioned week's induction or a very short induction. But the main thing about those two areas, really, was that there was an effort to make sure the student actually had an understanding of HE, that they'd made that crossover, that there was a need for a greater independence of thought and greater independent study and research. There was a greater need for self-organisation and for self-regulation, and they really needed to understand the language of HE, which again has been mentioned several times earlier, and to develop a kind of student confidence. So these two areas perhaps represent a need for a crucial shift from applicant to belonging to the institution. Going around the model, the academic experience clearly needs to be positive. They need to identify with their course. There's a great opportunity to identify with their fellow students and with their tutors. There should be proper induction and a supported introduction and development through their academic study. If maths or study support or anything like that is needed, it should be available. Good assessment and feedback was highlighted as being absolutely critical. And again, some element of future planning, sort of looking at postgrad work, employment, but some element of future planning that related to the course and made it more meaningful. In terms of the social experience, it's obviously very, very possible to get strong bonds and experience within course groups, and many of the projects were looking at including some kind of socially integrated experience that related to the actual academic delivery. And clearly, there's the wider student social experience that as it's widely understood, and all the new things around tweeting and social networks and the various electronic ways of meeting together. But again, one of the things that was highlighted is that the needs obviously may be different for different students. So again, it's obvious, but these are the things which the research threw up. They'd be different for a mature student. They would be different for a part-time student. They'd be different to someone who brings other identities or needs to the institution. So as part of the whole carousel, really, of stuff that institutions should be thinking about providing that would improve student engagement and belonging, there's the professional services provision. And again, we had a session towards the end of the last plenary which talked about that. And again, it's obvious, but the important thing that came out of the research was that it's not only that those services are there, but that the student has an awareness of them, a knowledge of them, and knows how to access them. If they don't, they might as well not be there. So again, there's a whole raft of student services, counselling, careers, personal tutoring, library and learning services, disability services, information, advice and guidance of other sorts, admissions, marketing, chaplains, the widening participation equality departments, student unions. Again, I've just been in a session about student unions, and a number of things that do involve students, such as peer mentoring. So again, a whole range of professional service provision there to help and enhance the student experience. And finishing off the model, top left, is organisational management. Universities are obviously often fearsomely complicated places. Strategy and operational activity and direction can come adrift. There's lots of delegation and different delivery. But to ensure student retention and success, more and more it's coming out, there's a clear responsibility on institutions to provide the resources, to provide the systems and the processes, to provide a whole series of ongoing opportunities, really, to enable students to embrace and achieve the sort of student experience and engagement that is represented in that kind of model. So we can pick out and discuss the model a little bit more if you like. I was asked to talk for about 15 minutes, so I'm nearly kind of finished. There's one more handout. The project that we're on, which finishes in July, and there will be a big conference in March at York, which is all advertising in this. This is the sixth and last briefing from the programme. So this actually
does a number of things. It takes that model on a bit further that I've put out earlier. It pulls together quite a bit of practice and gives lots of examples. As part of the dissemination of the programme as a whole, Action and Access and the Higher Education Academy didn't want it just to be a programme that related to the seven projects that were part of the programme. So we've increasingly tried to make sure that more and more universities were involved. And there is a retention GISMA list, for instance. We had a big, very big conference a couple of years ago in York to start the whole thing off, where we invited other institutions. When you look through this, you'll see that there are all sorts of examples from institutions that are not within the seven projects. So we've really tried to kind of pull it out and make it more of a resource, even as it was developing to other institutions. So this briefing kind of gives a conceptual model which identifies some of the findings in the practice, and they're located within one, the academic sphere. And again, one thing I perhaps haven't mentioned yet is the necessity, which again was mentioned upstairs a couple of times, for staff capacity building. If there isn't work done with the academic staff and staff throughout the institution, then a lot of this falls down. And then the other sphere is the social sphere, and the third sphere is the professional services sphere. So as you look through the briefing, it deals with those three particular spheres, and it pulls out all sorts of things that are going on at the moment across different universities and some colleges in terms of retention type work. But it does stress the primary importance of the academic sphere. I mean, you know, the university is not a social club for young adults. It's got a serious reason for being there and for working with young people and older people. But it's the academic sphere which holds actually quite a lot of opportunities, if you look through the project work, for engaging and improving student experience and seeing retention and success. And I suppose the briefing again and the some of the information from the projects emphasises the need to engage with students across the student life cycle. I think a lot of what we perhaps heard upstairs was about attracting students to university, certainly in terms of all the information and stuff. But you know, once you've attracted the students, there's lots of student engagement and retention type work that can go on. So, I mean, final point I would make really is that, again, the briefing reiterates the institutional responsibilities. The institution, as a inclusive organisation, as a holistic, and especially at senior but also operational levels, needs to manage and promote the sorts of things that the project's beginning to find. The Paul Hamlin work will demonstrate the critical importance of successful student engagement to retention, and it will give lots of specific interventions that have actually been proved, and because we've done it over 3 years, will be shown to improve rates. And so, again, that's it. If you look at the last page, or the last but one page, you can see on there that there's bottom of page 18, there's various websites you can go on to if you want to kind of find out more and find out more information on it. Our Action and Access website has got a lot of the information. All the briefings there if you wanted to look back at the other briefings. There is, if you look at the end of the list of calendar events, obviously most of them are out of date now, but if you look at the last of that, the event here is it. But it perhaps ought to have said that on the 28th and 29th of March at York University, there's a final project, 2-day conference on the retention project, which again is not just about the projects, but it's a wider opportunity for people to get involved in a discussion on retention. If you want to get involved in the retention GISMAIL, then again there's a community of about 400 people I think on that, and things are coming out from the programme, so it's quite lively at the moment at least. And that's at, I think it's in the thing somewhere in the book, but it's at student-retention-and-success@GISMAIL. student-retention-and-success@gismail.uk. So again, if you're interested and want to find out more about all of that. that's about it. Action Access is giving a conference summit on the 28th of November called Access to Higher Education here in London, and we've got three of the projects that are actually giving some of the workshops there. So again, if you're interested, there's information on the Action Access website, but there's an opportunity again to find out more about it. So that was a quick whistle-stop tour through the project. I've tried to bring out some of the main findings and some of the kind of interesting areas that have been thrown up. I'm interested in any comments anybody's got about the I'm admittedly it's just been thrown at you, but any comments you've got or thoughts about the kind of programme as I've revealed it. And if anybody wants to know more afterwards, please do talk to me or contact us or access the website. But otherwise, I know it's now nearly whatever time it nearly is, but if we want to have a discussion, we can for a quarter of an hour before we get thrown out. If people have had enough, then it's been a long, long day. I don't know. So any particular comments?
Well, I'll raise one, because I think it's fascinating to have a quick thumb through of the projects and activities that you described, and I think there's some really good and interesting strategies and ideas and things that can be taken forward there. But I kind of wonder to what extent all those new things you've done are kind of the cream of the cake rather than the fundamentals of what's needed. Because, of course, if you think about where we get our attention statistics from, if we've got 20+% 22% of whatever it is nationally who we don't manage to retain, there are certainly some who are very able students of the circumstances that caused them to drop out for some reason, but probably there's more correlation with the weaker students and the ones who have got semi-chaotic lives and all this kind of stuff. And I noticed that at the end your list of stuff here actually mentions engagement appears in almost every one of these things, and including monitoring student engagement. And I just wonder whether, if we do all the cream stuff, are we actually making things better for the students who we'd retain anyway, or are we really getting to the students who are going to make the difference to the statistics? Sorry, Andy Downton, De Montfort University.
Thank you. I think if you do read that, at least three of the projects are more focused on the nitty-gritty, if you like. I suppose, in a sense, the briefing's trying to pull out some of the the kind of top line stuff, really. But certainly, in terms of some of the projects, it's looking very much. I mean, the one with Sunderland, the one where Hull's looking at mature students, and they've really got into quite some depth with four or five different groups across the university. The Newcastle looking at engineering students as a kind of bunch, and a lot of those are part time, and a lot of those have got various other kind of draws on their time. And another one, Sunderland, is actually looking at the different ways in which local students may or may not be engaging. So I think there is within the projects, and perhaps we need to bring that out better in terms of the final report will come out, I think, in sort of March or April. And perhaps we need to bring that out more.
Andy Gibson, Hare School, Electrical Engineering, Manchester University. We had a huge retention problem. 40% of our home students we were losing a few years ago. We've got that down to 19% this year. Now, what we noticed was that the people people that continued, it was related to attendance. So those that didn't attend basically failed the first year and had to leave the course. So what we did was we put monitoring into the lecture, so it's a swipe card system. We found that our attendance has really improved, and we, our figures have improved from 40% to 19%. But another thing, it's more complex sometimes, different courses, different institutions. What we found is that we don't really adjust our marks in the first year, so it's a poor average. It's moved to about 40% or just above. There's a range that can go down. It goes to the bottom of the range. But other courses, other schools, other courses find if they've got an average down at 20-30%, they adjust it up to 60%. And that's going that has an impact on retention just by doing that. So it's not consistent.
No.
So it may look like, you know, some schools are doing a bad job, but actually they're, and in the end, we don't, all our students in third year actually get a degree, whereas in other places there's failures, you know, there's no degrees given.
Yeah.
So it's a bit more complicated.
It's really easy to be just black and white about it, and the whole continuation rates and non-completion rates are, they need disentangling, really. Yeah, I agree.
Has anything been done to tie together any of the work this is actually on access? You've got a wealth of material now with anything like back on course wealth of information about when they're contacting people who've left, because I know that one of the things that they were finding, a lot of it was about lack of communication, so the student didn't really even know that they were not completing until they were in the position of not completing. Are there any kind of early warning signs that have come out through these things, and are there any links to the other national research?
We haven't linked it into anything formally,
mm-hmm.
but as I say, we have tried to make sure. I think you know, that they will be inviting other retention type kind of projects and programs to the March conference, but we haven't done anything formally around that. It would be interesting to kind of to pull more of it together.
Yeah.
Perhaps a task for us next year once we've got through the final report for this one. Thanks.
We hear from UEL because they've got a progress bursary system, which I think Moshi's investigating, and that seems to be showing some interesting results.
So
yeah.
People were here in the session before, they used the Aspire smart card system that targets spending in particular areas that they say it can be spent in, but you also get more released the more that you progress, so to speak, and we're actually doing some work looking at tying that through to retention, but also tying that through to the value and impact of actually delivering a bursary in that way. The assumption, and certainly the early indications are, that it does help.
Yes, well, the retention rate of two cohorts of graduates
mm-hmm.
has gone from something like 14% down to
7%. Mm-hmm. Well, there's lots and lots of work going on, as I say, we did this because the money was made available to do it, and to do it within 7 projects, but we've tried our best to make sure that we try and pull some of the other work in as well, but it's across all institutions, and there's all sorts of different things going on.
But I think those examples do kind of highlight that there's a sort of basic thing, and it always struck me as bizarre that we kind of by default have a higher education system which differs from every other part of the education and work life cycle in not formally structuring attendance, for example.
Mm.
You know, we kind of have this idea that that students should be independent learners, so we kind of let them off the leash completely at exactly the point where they're not very experienced about how to do it. You know, and you know, the army goes to the other extreme, but I don't think we want to go down that line exactly. But you know, it might be that we're just doing a bit too much in terms of letting them off the leash. Actually, you know. And that's the simplest, and I mean, I'll give that for example. We're just trialing cards for attendance ourselves, actually, and, you know, with a view to possibly rolling them out if we can see that it will have an impact on retention. And your example certainly shows that it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's worked. I used to work in further education too as a student services, and it was one of the places I worked with did that, and it worked really, really well.
Mm.
Yes, sorry.
Just wait. My name's Caroline. I'm the president of the University of Salford Students' Union, so I suppose we come at a slightly different angle. As far as I'm aware, there's been a lot of research into the issue of retention over a number of years. And I suppose we're kind of sort of putting it out there to see why has there been all this research and yet the retention, national retention, is still on is 20%. You know, why has there been years of work done and nothing has actually changed for the students? And it's also from maybe my slightly less experienced it is about that sense of belonging. You said it's not difficult, it isn't difficult.
Mm.
Some of this is common sense, so I kind of think, why has there been so much research for so many years when I feel it is sort of common sense, and it's about students feeling that they are actually a person, that you know, the institution and lecturers and ministry staff and anyone they come into contact recognises that they are an individual who has come from a variety of backgrounds, have lots of different things going on. And they're not just simply a bomb on a seat or a number. You know, they actually have a life, a story to tell. But just slightly just following on from the attendance, I completely accept that attendance you know, has a massive correlation to success and achievement. And as an undergraduate, I went to absolutely everything I could, mainly because I didn't want to have to do so much outside of that. But and I completely went to everything. However, I just think that it's really dangerous to turn it into it just being about attendance. It does have to be about participation, and the emphasis has to be still on the academic and the institution to make their programmes engaging and to make them exciting. The students actually want to go to them, not just because they're going to be there or stick because they've not turned up to the lecture, but because they actually want to be there, they actually want to be part of their learning experience. And obviously that comes from the student as well. I'm not trying to abdicate responsibility at all. But attendance for me is not the answer, and it's a crude way of just trying to make sure people are engaging this lovely word that we like to use.
Fair point, I think. But I think, again, you know, from the work we've been doing, it is that sense of belonging, and it is that preparatory work in the early stages of getting students to get a better understanding of what HE is asking of them, and then delivering to them, giving them, and just helping them to kind of get a sense of belonging, to become partners, as they were saying upstairs, in the process.
I think you did actually make the point at the beginning, but I'd also in response to your comment that it's easy to kind of appear too defensive about this. I mean, we have actually improved things. We've improved things because we've got the same retention rate, but with a much more diverse set of students coming in. Because as we've increased the proportion, you know, you can't get more of the top 10%. You get the next 20% down, or whatever it is. So that has been a factor. And if we'd done nothing, we probably would have got less retention. And then the second point, of course, is that, you know, politicians are always kind of giving us a hard time about this, but we actually have the most efficient system in the world, you know, bar none, in terms of, you know, nobody else gets anywhere near our retention rates in other countries. You go to quite a lot of the European countries, you know, their retention rates are less than 50%.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they have open access, of course.
That's why I was kind of tongue-in-cheek wondering whether we've got a natural level even for us at
22%. Yeah. So, you know, somewhere or other there is a limit to what we can do, and I don't think we should be defensive about making the point that we're actually doing extremely well already. Yeah.
And as an ex-careers advisor, you know, if someone made a choice to leave a course, then they may have a very sensible choice to leave. Maybe the best thing for them to do. It's not necessarily a kind of negative outcome, if you like. So, any other comments or thoughts? I mean, that's really helpful, thank you, in terms of I can feed that back into the team that's organising things. And I hope you found it interesting. And as I say, if you want to follow any of the talk, if you use the last briefing I've given you, you can do that with the various links. And on the back, I forgot to say, well, these are the people who are actually running the project. So, and with contact details. So if you're particularly interested, do please follow it up. But thank you very much for attending the second level of Dante's Inferno shift. And I'm sorry if I flagged a little bit, but I've been on the girl since half past six or something like that. So, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Fantastically
well. That was great. It was a good session.
Thank you very much. Sorry. Okay, is that the manager? Just after the manager? Just after, yeah. So you, obviously you missed.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Bigger work next year.
Do you have a card
to do that as well?
Or are you on the back of this?
I've given my last one away. But I only came down with about half a dozen.
Perhaps you foolishly.
Good just make contact.
Yeah, but John Storen at
yes, he's
at UEA. He's our director.
That's right. Yes, exactly
so,
right.
You know, you could
in
a sense you could do it with him if you. Were.
Yeah, I mean.
No,
I've, yeah,
I've,
yeah.
I'll actually give him. I'll give him a detail. So.
Okay.
Perhaps
you just write in the back of the. Yeah, no, we know John.
But we'd definitely like to get something. You know, because again, we've got much more limited funding now that the Hefke's withdrawn our funding as
yes.
the National Coordination Team. So for the things we do, we need to be doing it with other people.
Yes.
You know, so
yes.
much more than we did. So
yes. Yeah, and
so
there is evidence out there.
Yeah.
It's just, as you say, it's just collating it and drawing some strains.
It is, and it's also... it's also kind of... There's just so much of it, really, in a sense. But there isn't... I don't know much to say about the research, because we found very little... proper research, academic research, but apart from quite a bit of American stuff,
yes,
and that's kind of okay. But
yes, well, there's very little things schemes in place that enable evidence to come back.
Yeah, but there are things ongoing at the moment, like yours and like
the Well, the beauty with ours is we can account for every penny that's spent to every student, and tell how many books they bought, how much Oyster travel they've spent.
Right.
We can show that first class students spend more. Per head on books than two ones, two twos, thirds. Thirds spend more on travel. Maybe that reflects
right.
the more they need.
Right.
Right. You know, it is actually
it's
quite interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Quite interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think everyone has an idea how to solve it, but they want some evidence to support that in order to make decisions, isn't it?
And there's some crass things like, you know, the fact that. Swipe cards actually make a difference. I mean, they do, you know. I can't think that it's really a negative thing unless it really puts some students off. Like, you know, the big brother element of it, or just having to have it and all that kind of stuff. But it seems to work.
Is it too much to ask for them to turn up to? You know, is it beyond the pale?
No, you would expect it. I mean, I would, one of the things I worry about, I was going to mention, we didn't really have time, is that it was mentioned upstairs. It's like. Data isn't even information. Information isn't advice. Advice isn't guidance. And unless you've actually got some guidance with all this stuff, and one thing I worry about in the Manchester model is that when I was a student, you know, like I say that really, when I was a student, I went on to my first tutorial, whatever it was. I was given my timetable. I was given the reading list. I was given. Okay. Oh, is it still? Yeah, yeah.
Thanks.
I was given the sorts of things that they were saying that were accessible for the electronic thing.
Yes.
And it was discussed in the group, and it was discussed with the tutor, and it all made...
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.